Chapter 20. It was past the middle of the afternoon by the time I got the Blue Beetle from Mike's and headed back to my apartment. I tried to be wary of possible tales, but by then the local was wearing off and my leg was hurting again. I don't know if you've ever had a serious physical injury, but there's more to it than simply increasing the amount of discomfort. It's tiring. The pain carries with it attacks of bone-deep weariness that makes you want to crawl into a dark hole and hibernate. So, when I say I tried to be wary, what I mean is that I flicked a glance at my rearview mirror a couple of times whenever I had the presence of mind to remember to do so. As long as the bad guys were restricting themselves to driving brightly painted side-panel vans or maybe nitro-burning funny cars, I was perfectly safe. I got back to my place, disabled the wards, unlocked the door, and slipped inside. Mister came flying down the stairs at my back and thumped companionably against my legs. I all but screamed. "Stupid cat," I snarled. Mister wound around my legs in a pleased fashion, unconcerned with my opinion of him. I limped inside and locked up behind me. Mouse waited until Mister was bored with me, then shambled over to snuffle at my legs and collect a few scratches behind his ears. "Hey there," Thomas greeted me quietly. He sat in the chair by the fire, several candles lit on the end table beside it. He had a book open, sword and shotgun rested near his hand. He glanced at my leg and rose, his face alarmed. "What happened?" I grimaced, tottered over to the couch, and plopped down on it. "Sticks and stones may break your bones, but Chinese throwing stars get you a dozen stitches." I drew the ghoul's weapon from my pocket by way of illustration and tossed it down on the coffee table. "How's Butters?" "Fine," Thomas said. "Funny little guy. Made an awful racket with that polka thing of his for about half an hour. Babbled for 40 minutes straight and fell asleep eating dinner. I put him on the bed." "He's had a stressful day," I said. "He's a coward," Thomas said. I glared at him and started to snarl something harsh and defensive. He held up a hand and hurried to speak. "Don't take that wrong, Harry. He's smart enough to understand what's happening, and he's smart enough to know that there's not a damn thing he can do about it. He knows the only reason he's alive is that someone else is protecting him. He isn't kidding himself that he's somehow done it because of his own cleverness or skill." Thomas glanced at the door to the bedroom. "He doesn't know how to deal with the fear. It's strangling him." I propped my aching leg up on the coffee table. "Thank you for your professional opinion, counselor." Thomas gave me a level look. "I've seen it before. I know what I'm talking about." "Whatever," I said. "When you were attacked in the morgue last night, he froze, didn't he?" I shrugged one shoulder. "Not everyone is cut out for the battlefield." "But he froze," Thomas said. "You had to scream orders into his ear and haul him around like luggage, right? That doesn't make him a coward. He lets his fear control him. That's what a coward is, Harry." "A lot of people would react the same way," I said. "A lot of people aren't making themselves into excess baggage for my brother," he shot back. "No one does well their first time out," I said. "It isn't an isolated incident," Thomas said. "You told me that when he reported on the corpses taken from Bianca's manor, they locked him up in the nut house. So? So, do you think he got his job back without backing down? Admitting to some shrink that he hadn't really seen what he saw?" Thomas shook his head. "He was afraid to lose his career. He caved." I sat silently. "Doesn't make him a bad person," Thomas said, "but he's a coward. He's either going to get you killed or else freeze at a bad moment and die, and you'll torture yourself over how it's all your fault. If we want to survive, we need to get him somewhere safe, then cut him loose. Better for everyone." I thought about it for a minute. "You might be right," I said, "but if we tell him to rabbit, he's never going to be able to get over the fear. We'll be making it worse for him. He has to face it down." "He doesn't want to." "No," I said, "but he needs to." Thomas looked from me to the fire and nodded. It's your show.